us and we gotta go. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Welcome to What in God's Name? She's Shana Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
We're doing current events and culture from a theological and philosophical point of view.
And I want to welcome all our listeners from the pandemic realm out there into, you know, 20, 25 minutes of what we hope will be a pastoral, calming, enlightening talk.
On public radio about a week ago, I heard somebody describe this time that we're in as a public health crisis, an economic crisis, and an information crisis. And I, Shana, reflected, well, they left out something really important, which is it's also a spiritual crisis.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
My further reflection is we don't have, as a culture, we don't have the language, the public language, to talk about that. And that's part of what we're doing on this show, is filling the need to have public language about our common, commonly held spiritual lives.
Well, that's what we're aiming for anyway.
Oh, of course, it's a high bar.
It's an aspirational bar, yes.
We are in the middle of our fun drive, and we're carrying on with our fun drive even in this time, partly because generosity casts out fear. So we do invite you to remain generous. If you wish to donate to our fund drive, you can do so on our website, whatingods.com, WHATINGODS. But if you feel like your money could be used in a better way towards a food bank or some local relief efforts, by all means, send your money in that direction. The big idea, the spiritual idea, is that generosity casts out fear. So stay generous, and you can feel the fear dissipate when we reach out.
Yes, that's so true, Chris. And, you know, we know from experience and from research that being of use is a real good tool in the fight against growing anxiety, unmanageable anxiety. So yeah, make yourselves of use out there, people, with whatever you've got, however you can do it. And even if the only thing you can do at this time is to keep yourself safe so as not to, you know, be part of this overwhelm on our nation's healthcare systems. If that's the only thing you can do, that is not a small thing. So just encourage everyone to do what you can where you are.
Shana and I were talking about this show today, and we wanted to talk about encounters. Shana's idea, beautiful idea.
It was my idea based on a storytelling slam that I had gotten invited to, and the theme was encounter, and the stories that were shared were so fascinating. But it got me to thinking that, you know, encounter by its nature is surprising. Sometimes funny, sometimes not, but it never leaves us unchanged. I was thinking about this drive I was taking up to Concord, New Hampshire, from my home in Milford, New Hampshire, up the back roads. Beautiful spring day. It was back in the day when I had my Mini Cooper. I had the top down. The sun was shining. Just a fine, perfect day, weaving through these beautiful back roads along this brook, and got up to Goffstown, where there's a stop sign, and was waiting to turn left. And the woman in the car behind me got out of her car, you know, with some energy, and her cell phone in her hand, and she started to approach me, and I, you know, started wondering, like, is my car on fire or something, you know, hanging out of a door somewhere? And she came up to me, and she asked, do you mind, if I take your picture? You look just like my daughter's imaginary friend. And I turned around and looked at her, and I, you know, waiting to wake up, you know, it's one of those moments where you're like, surely, I had nothing to say. I make my living with words. I remind you of your daughter's imaginary friend. Like, I have so many questions about that statement that I don't even know where to begin, but probably the easiest thing to do is just say, great, fine, go ahead and take the picture, which she did. So, you know, funny encounter. Less funny encounter, but one I want to share with our listeners real briefly is that in my role as a fire department chaplain, I was called out to be part of a team that's going to be serving a group of people who we don't normally serve. Fire department chaplains normally serve uniformed personnel. But in this crisis, it seems we have quite a number of non-uniform personnel, otherwise known as civilians, who are doing things like answering your state's crisis phone lines or the employment phone lines, who, you know, might normally be working at the Department of Motor Vehicles or some other, you know, Department of Public Works. They're, you know, civilians working as state employees who have now been tapped to be on the front line of the emotional stuff, the emotional content of this pandemic. So we're going to go out and to support them. It got me to thinking, Chris, that this is not just happening in my state. This has got to be happening in call centers across the country. And while we so often, we recognize those heroes in a crisis who are visible, you know, the doctors, the nurses, the cops, the firefighters, the emergency medical services personnel, and they are all, you know, due our respect and our praise for sure. How many more invisible heroes are there? The janitorial staff at the hospital and cafeteria workers, people working in the grocery stores, and, you know, all of those essential personnel right now who are out there doing their jobs, trying to keep the wheels on the bus going round and round. So I put that out there. That was a thought I had in response to an encounter I had earlier this week. And I would really love it if those of our listeners who are inclined to be in the posture of prayer now and again to lift up prayers for all those people. And for those of you who are not real big on praying, just send positive thoughts and energy their way, because I know they could use it. How about you, Chris? What's on your radar screen vis-a-vis encounter?
I do want to ask you more about your work with those people going forward, because you did share with me that you'll be doing some of the work with those folks who don't have training responding to crisis situations. But before we get there, my reflection is that this coronavirus is an encounter for us. Is that, would you
say? Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's the way you defined encounter.
Yeah.
Surprising and doesn't leave us unchanged.
Unchanged.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that we are powerless over, you know, that like this thing happened, didn't come out of the blue, you know, regardless of what the administration would have us believe. There were people who saw this coming. That having been said, it came out of the blue for someone at some point, somewhere in time. We were powerless over the pandemic, but we're not powerless over our response to it.
And that's part of your training in helping in trauma response, right? Is that one of the messages that you give to people in those situations?
It is. It is a message that we give them. It's a message that we give them based on experience, though. So it's not like a belief necessarily, because we can quantify it. And we know that it's actually a very small percentage of people who, if exposed to trauma, will manifest PTSR. And I think that came out in your interview a couple of months ago with Concord's fire chief.
Yes.
So very few people will develop PTS, and I use R as opposed to D.
R being?
Response.
Rather than disorder? Is D disorder?
D is disorder, and a traumatic incident is characterized as an abnormal set of circumstances that overwhelms our normal ability to manage stuff. I mean, each of us has capacity. Each of us has some resiliency, but we can be thrown into a situation where suddenly the content of that situation overwhelms our normal coping mechanism. My question is, what's a normal response to that? You know, so, and no one's been able to quantify that. So a lot of us in the trenches refer to it as post-traumatic stress response, because it's not all a disorder. There is a point at which it becomes a disorder, but initially, usually for the first 6 to 8 weeks after exposure, things are going to be weird and you're going to have intrusive thoughts, and, you know, you may have trouble sleeping and eating, and, you know, it's going to be hard getting into the normal schedule of thing. We expect that after encountering some trauma, but we know that within 4 to 6 weeks or so after exposure, most people can get back to their lives. They are not, however, unchanged. Trauma well resolved creates resiliency. And that's just what we're finding out now after years and years of years. So there's actually a whole new study out there that is post-traumatic stress growth, PTSG, and people are starting to look at why do some people do better than others. One of the things that really helps is people being able to be active in a traumatic. So one of the things that hurts, let me frame it the other way, one of the things that really makes it difficult for people to deal with a trauma is if they freeze.
Freeze in the moment or freeze afterwards or both?
Freeze in the moment. Freeze in the moment. If something jumped off and they just froze and they couldn't do anything, that makes it really hard for people to deal with whatever the trauma was long term. So, you know, I go back to this saying that my mom used to have, do you do something, even if it's wrong, do something, you know, get yourself active, you know, snap yourself out of it and try to get busy, do something. I know there's a lot of people now who are, they're sending out patterns for sewing face masks for healthcare personnel. People are, one person I heard of put flyers with her name and number in all the mailboxes in her neighborhood so that elderly folks would have somebody to call. And she's, you know, said she can go out and do shopping for them. And there's a lot to be done. There's lots of subtle, small ways that we can each reach out, make a difference in this time.
So that's why you called people at the beginning of our show today to do something.
Do something. Do something. Get active. Get in there. Because that's when you can begin to do something, you are no longer at effect of the thing that is happening. You move to a different position where you are now at cause.
You are an agent.
You are an agent. You are causing something to happen despite, you know, whatever else is happening out there.
So this is turning into I'm interviewing you, which I love. But tell me about
such good questions, Chris.
Tell me about the relationship between anxiety and trauma, because we already live in a highly anxious society. And there is some relationship between anxiety and trauma, is there not? I feel intuitively like there is.
There is. And the person who expressed it the most succinctly, I think, was Thich Nhat Hanh, who said that anxiety is basically fear that has gotten into your heart. I mean, fear is a good response to some things. And I would say, with respect to this pandemic, a healthy dose of fear is not a bad thing. It keeps us respectful and mindful of what we need to do to keep ourselves and our loved ones safe. So fear in and of itself isn't a bad thing, but when fear gets into our heart, then it becomes anxiety and it will make us sick. And of course, if you're a Buddhist, the way you prevent that fear from, you know, moving from the head into the heart is by doing things like sitting and meditating and right thought and right speech. And, you know, that is beyond even comprehension for most of us who are not practicing Buddhists, or for those of us whose Buddhist practice could use some improvement. But I think that, you know, the other thing that Thich Nhat Hanh says is to do what you can and to trust that it's enough. Do what you can and trust that it's enough. Trust that it's making a difference. Again, this kind of goes back to a show we did on being right-sized. You know, if we represent privileged classes, if we are white, if we are educated, if we are financially affluent, we feel a certain expectation to make a big splash, to solve the problem. And so we can't solve the problem, and so now we feel helpless. And it's like, well, okay, no, you can't solve the problem, white, educated, affluent person, but here's what you can do. And it might be a good experience to do a simple thing well, and then to practice trusting that it's enough. And that's one way we can inoculate ourselves against that fear becoming anxiety. And, you know, the other thing is kind of give ourselves a little bit of a break. Every traumatic situation, every trauma that we absorb has to be metabolized. And there's a time frame to that metabolism, to metabolizing that trauma. So, you know, we have to be gentle with ourselves and take care of ourselves. Because of the old adage, if you're on the airplane, you know, and if the oxygen mask comes out of the ceiling, folks, put your own on first so that you can better help the people sitting around you. And I think now is one of those times where that is absolutely, that has got to be first and foremost. And it's counterintuitive.
I resonated with the word metabolize because studies do show that trauma affects the body and the brain, like actually the shape of the brain, which is a whole realm that we could get into, but won't. But the processing of, I mean, your words of
process
counsel here. Yes. Like it takes, there's time involved.
There's time involved. And I don't know if you're seeing this, but as I've been driving around, I'm seeing a whole lot of people out walking, which is great. You know, a brisk walk, anything that'll get your pulse and blood pressure up a little bit for 20 minutes will seriously help to break down the sludge that is formed from the chemicals that get released when we're experiencing trauma.
When you were talking about fear and anxiety, I was framing that in philosophical terms, fear having an object. I'm afraid of catching the virus, or I'm afraid of
the bear at my back door.
The night. I'm afraid of thunder when it thunders. There's an object to the fear. Mm-hmm. And then there's free-floating anxiety, which has no ground, no object. Some philosophers have classified that as this kind of existential anxiety over non-being. The ability of the human being to conceptualize abstractly a world in which I do not exist.
This otherwise known as death?
Existential dread of non-being. But it's more than death. It's not simply the cessation of physical life, but of course death is more than that too. It's the dread of nothingness.
I don't know. That thought is somehow, as you were saying it, I was sort of thinking, it sounds pretty nice, actually. You know,
well,
it's
isn't
like
that interesting?
Peace that,
yes,
you know,
yes, possibly.
Possibly.
I mean, you could look at it that way. The other way to look at it, which I have at times experienced in my life and not in a pleasant way, which is this feeling of cut, just ultimate cutoff, like in the abyss, separate from all.
Mm.
So profoundly lonely, profoundly cut off. And that is a,
in
that
a place, is a, in a place where nobody can reach you.
Exactly.
And, you know, I feel like that's so often a hell of our own creation.
Yes.
You know, and I've put myself there. I've been there, done that, got the t-shirt. It's
I don't have the t-shirt.
You don't have the t-shirt. You're going to have to go back and get it. Sorry, pal. But yeah, no, it most often is, you know, the hell of our own creating. And so again, we come back to this concept of, you know, for me, it always comes back to the serenity prayer, right? Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, but the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. I am not powerless in the face of this pandemic. I may be powerless to shut the pandemic down. I may be powerless to keep people I love safe, but there are things that I can do to keep people I love safe. So I'm not 100% powerless there. There's things I can do to keep myself safe. There's things I can do to be of service in this time. So, you know, that's how I'm keeping the fear at bay and keeping it. That's how I'm inoculating my heart from letting the fear really kind of take root there and making me sick.
Let me share with you an encounter that I had as a child that in some way I feel like addresses what we're talking about and the coronavirus scare and anxiety. It was fifth grade band. We had all just gotten our instruments. We had learned enough about how to play them that we could be together as the fifth grade band and have this very simple music in front of us. And I remember I was French horn player.
And you were a French horn player?
Oh, yes.
Chris.
Yes.
I was a French horn
player.
Get
out of town.
I am absolutely serious.
Okay.
Oh, my God. So topic for another
there we go.
Day.
Be
wow.
curious, go deep and
yeah,
shine
exactly,
light.
Exactly. Wow.
So,
okay.
So, fifth grade band.
French horn player
playing this very simple music. And I remember, I can feel it viscerally, the first time that I made harmony with other people. And it went through my body. And I said, I just felt like, oh, I want that. Like, want to. And
you understand why they call it enlightenment,
yeah,
right?
It's that. It's energy and it lifts you up.
Yeah.
And upon further reflection, music, I'm talking about harmony, making, it's bigger than you and holds you.
But you are a part of
it. And you are connected with everybody else who's doing it, and you're a part of it. And so in some ways, if I think about it, music in my life, it's given me those kinds of moments where I don't feel alone or cut off. Music.
And what a beautiful metaphor, Chris. I mean, aren't we all at our best when we're working together towards some common thing, stepping in and stepping out, giving others a chance to step up as we step back and vice versa, blending together as this, I mean, oftentimes the metaphor is tapestry, but, you know, for those of our folks who are more audible, I think the idea of this, you know, this band making music is so beautiful. It gives me goosebumps. Encounter, by its very definition, is surprising. Sometimes funny, sometimes not, but it never leaves us unchanged. So, friends, wherever you are, whatever you're doing right now, stay curious.
Go deep.
And shine light.
If this show is helpful to you, please share it out to your friends, to your social network. We produced a show last week, a pastoral message, and it went out far and wide. And so we're hitting something that is a need. Help us to continue to do that. Shana has amazing insight into the stresses that people have and are under and how to deal with that in healthy ways. And that's an important message in this time. You can go to our Facebook page, at What in Gods. Sometimes there are funny pictures there. And our website, whatingods.com, whatingods. See you next time.
See you next time, Chris.